Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Atlanta Business Radio, and this is one of my favorite episodes of the month. It is when we bring in the folks from Thai Atlanta here to update us on what's going on and what has happened in the past. And welcome to Amin. How are you doing, Amin?
Good. I'm doing good. Thanks for having us once again. Again, it's that time of the month, and we really enjoy being here with you and your company. And we got some good guests here. We brought some good folks with us.
Now, anything happened last few weeks at Thai?
Yeah, we had the last event that we had was a strategic planning session. You know, we called in our stakeholders, we had our sponsors, our mentors, and our membership come in, really just yell at us about what we're doing wrong and help us. And well, it helped us improve on, you know, on things that how we can better help, you know, the community, really tap into, you know, what they want from us, you know, the kind of you know, the programs, the education that they needed, and the type of mentorship that they needed. So
now, anything jump off the page? Any key learnings?
Key learnings is that everyone knows us as the Indian Boys Club.
So, really?
Yeah, and they
said even that, with Karen as the
even
former
with Karen. Yeah, and then as soon as they throw that line at us, I'm like, well, you know, I would like to introduce our president, who's a white female.
Right.
So it's it was good because we really got, once they come to a Thai event, that really changes. They see that we are, you know, as our mission is, we are, you know, industry and stage agnostic. Mm-hmm. You know, we appeal to not just tech-oriented companies. The entrepreneur ecosystem is very vast. It's, you know, there's different types of innovation taking place everywhere in different fields, whether it be in, you know, one of our companies that we're mentoring is a waterproofing company. They waterproof and insulate data centers like Google, you know. I mean, really, like, that's where that it's just so unique. So, you know, innovation can happen anywhere. And though that's the crowd that we're, you know, kind of catering towards, and the underprivileged entrepreneur. Mm-hmm.
And you get to work with entrepreneurs at all stage of their life cycle, which is kind of unique also. You get them from high school all the way to after they've exited and want to serve their community by giving back.
Right, yep, all the way from high school. We have a high school program, a university program, and all the way to, you know, late stage companies that are just ready to give back, mentor, you know, give back the education, kind of help foster and cultivate the next generation of entrepreneurs. So I get, you know, it's awesome. You know, I get to meet folks like Monty, you know, Ingrid as well. It's just amazing. And then Kamal, who's been a longtime charter mentor and sponsor. So it's just a really good mix. You know, I'm lucky. I call myself a community servant. Because I get to help, you know, other entrepreneurs that are up and coming. But I get to pick brains, you know, just, that's so much fun. I get to talk to Monty, Kamal, Ingrid, and just kind of really.
I noticed you didn't mention me.
Well, Lee, you're family. I can just text you and get information out of you. But no, it's so amazing to be in just good company.
Right. And we're going to get back to you at the end where you can give the contact information if anybody wants to learn more about Thai, because it is an organization that is worth knowing about. And I'm glad to see that over the years that we've worked together that the footprint has expanded and you're serving more and more people in the entire Atlanta business ecosystem here. Like you mentioned, not just tech. Where
we love the radio.
All right. So let's see who you got. Let's lead off with the folks from Rural Sourcing.
Sounds good.
You want to introduce?
So yeah, we have two folks, Monty Hamilton and Ingrid. They were at ThaiCon this past September, and they also they were recognized at Atlanta's Top Entrepreneurs 2015. They have a really great story. I want to kind of leave it to them to tell. But just excited that they came back and they're able to, you know, talk a little bit about Thai and also, you know, what they've been doing, good, the great things that are happening at their company and their story as well.
Great. All right, let's start off with you, Monty. You're Monty Hamilton. You are the what? CEO, the grand poobah.
At least as of this morning, I was when I left.
I know, you got your COO here, so, you know, who's driving?
Yeah, well, you never know.
All right, so why don't you share a little bit about Rural Sourcing? What are you guys up to?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to thank Amin for Thai and all the community service that you're doing. It was great. We had a great event at ThaiCon. It was fantastic, and I was super impressed by the intellectual firepower that was on the stage at the end of the keynote there, not to mention the net worth that was probably north of 100 million or so between two individuals. So it was a pretty impressive group. So Rural Sourcing, we are a purpose-driven company, first of all. Our business model is to do IT outsourcing.
Well, but I'm going to pause you right there.
Yeah,
purpose-driven.
Sure.
You led with purpose-driven.
Yeah.
And can you share a little bit about what that means to you?
Yeah. So our mission in the company is to create thousands of U.S.-based technology jobs that are in places where they wouldn't otherwise be.
Mm-hmm.
So our whole business model is IT outsourcing. However, instead of doing it, which typically outsourcing has been synonymous with offshore,
right.
Our model is to do it here onshore in the U.S. And so we find, as we term it, low cost of living, high quality of life locations where we can amass 100 to 200 software engineers and software developers to do cool software work.
Now, when you go into a market to, you know, that sounds like a great mission. I'm going to go to a smaller, I guess you're going to the smaller towns?
Correct. Yep. Tier two, tier three cities.
You're not going to Atlanta necessarily. You're going to...
Where, the only thing that's in Atlanta is a cost center.
It's you.
Right. It's a cost center.
All right. But you're going to where? You're in Georgia.
We are. Right? We're in Augusta, Georgia. So
like Augusta is a better fit for you in a given city, not the Atlanta of the state. It would be the Augusta of the state.
That's correct. If you think about our business model, we go to where there are a lot of... AA and AAA farm club.
So
teams,
it's the
right?
minor league baseball teams.
Well, we our talent is not minor league.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that. However, the
but
cost
that's how
structure
you identify
is,
them, right?
That's right.
That's funny because in our business Radio X, we're expanding to other markets too, and that's exactly how we're describing the markets we're looking to serve is the minor league baseball cities. That's so we've identified it as such. That's funny.
Yeah,
we use the same terms.
Yeah, what we've determined through the business model here and a lot of research and stuff are in that there is an incredible amount of under-leveraged, marginalized talent in
right.
these tier two cities. So our newest city is Albuquerque, New Mexico,
uh-huh.
900,000 people population, no large tech employers there, but a tremendous amount of technology talent that is waiting to for us to come to town and get going on.
Now, so is that your first thing is you identify the talent first?
We do. Talent is always first. So our business model is... I have to keep things real simple because I have a fairly small brain here. Our business model is made up of three C's. First C is colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing is where's that talent coming from and can we take care of that talent? Second one is clients. Where are those clients and can we take care of those clients?
Mm-hmm.
And the third is community, making sure that we are giving back. We're part of organizations like TIE and like other not-for-profit organizations in these locations where we are. And part of our mission is to grow some of this talent and create a buzz around technology that otherwise may not be there in places.
So now, and you said colleagues. Now, when you go into these markets, is there 100 or 200 software engineers there waiting for you and they were just waiting for someone to come in and say, hey, build me some center and I'm going to get to work, or you have to grow your own?
Yeah, it's not quite that easy. what we found is the first 50 or so are pretty easy. I mean, it's
oh, really?
Active job searchers there, right? Some people in many cases who have, they've been in Atlanta, they lived here, they traveled here, they flew out of Hartsfield Monday through Thursday and decided that wasn't the lifestyle they were looking
right.
for. And they wanted a little bit more balance in their life, a little
right.
more work-life balance. And so they moved back to Augusta where they may have deep roots, family, et cetera. And when they do that, we have a model where we're solving big, complex problems for Fortune 1000 companies.
So right.
These aren't little small website development deals, right? These are large deals with companies like Pfizer and Coca-Cola and Georgia Pacific and other big brand name companies like that.
So now those are your clients, and then you are these the people like in Augusta, are those your employees or those are contract workers?
Those are our employees, but colleagues we prefer.
Yeah, colleagues.
Right? Yeah.
But they are all
W-2'd employees, yeah.
And so then they're working for you, whereas previously maybe they were contract workers just doing a variety of jobs for other companies on a project basis?
Yeah, we sort of pulled them out of probably three major areas, I would say. They're working in smaller IT shops, so they may be working at Club Car, Easy Go, or at the local healthcare system.
Right.
They may be working at the local university and in the IT world there. They may be former traveling consultants who have decided that that's not the lifestyle they want to continue to lead. And in other cases, we are pulling them straight out of universities or other training programs such as code academies and things like that.
So are you working with those kind of code academies and the university systems to train the people to get them ready to handle these larger projects?
We are, and I'll let Ingrid talk a little bit more about that since she knows a lot
All
more
right.
about what we do to get folks ready to perform.
All right, Ingrid, you're up.
Yeah, so we are certainly running a lot of boot camps in-house. We've built over the years specific training programs that are both technical as well as running our own Agile Scrum training and various training like that to prepare our folks to work with our clients. But we are working with, in several of our markets, the local code academies or the universities to put together specific programming.
A specific curriculum that'll serve your clients, right?
Correct.
So that's handy, right?
Correct.
That they're open to that.
They're very open to it. You know, we have some great partners in the space, and I think, you know, we're even trying to push them a little bit farther to see quite how we can help individuals that may not be in tech today but have that interest and play in that space in their personal time and see how we can get them into QA testing, QA automation, and start to learn the world of programming.
And find a role for them, right?
Correct.
Now, how does, like, college play into this? Because these are skills that you don't necessarily have to go to college to be good at or to find work, right?
Right, right. We don't require a four-year education. There are certainly, it runs the gamut, right? We have folks that have their master's in computer science who have gone through the very typical programming classes, done a lot of the mathematics and all of that. And then we have folks that have, that were teachers and have this incredible attention to detail. And so we've brought them in. They've gone through short programs where they learn about QA testing, and then we bring them in and put them through boot camps, and they're extremely successful.
But there can also be like a 15-year-old, right, that's doing this on the side for fun.
Child labor is not yet where we're playing,
it's the skills that isn't their necessarily their experience or their, you know, GPA,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And we're heavily involved in STEM education. We're big believers in starting at the middle school, grade school level. Mm-hmm. Wow. These kids, you know, if you look at the number of women in technology, unfortunately, they're not learning at a young age that this is a place that they can play. And
right.
So we bring on STEM interns from the high school level. We're working with the local communities to work on the programs that we can help with and show them what a day in the life of a programmer would be so that it becomes more available to them.
Now, as a woman in technology yourself,
yes.
Why do you think that is, that there is that kind of a
gap
for women in technology?
There is, there's so many, it goes all the way back to pink and blue as a kid, right? You know, girls are taught to play with dolls and not to build with blocks and do a lot of these things. And unfortunately, I think, they don't have a lot of role models. I mean, you look at, the women in technology, the women that are leading companies, and we're not sharing these stories to help them understand that how much fun is robotics? How much fun is getting into these things at a younger age? And so, you know, I've volunteered with WIT at a robotics event and saw some of these women
right.
at young ages who are so excited. And
because women consume the apps and technology and the web, but they just don't see themselves as creators?
No, you know what? I think that's all changing. I think we're seeing that the women that are getting into technology, the new generation is so thoughtful about entrepreneurship.
Right.
They are starting companies, what they don't realize are companies
right.
at young ages. And that's really exciting for us. We want to harness that. We want one of our core values is having an entrepreneurial spirit. We want all of our employees to be thinking, have not just ownership thinking, but innovation from an entrepreneurial level. What can we bring to the market that makes sense for our clients?
So can you share a little bit about, you mentioned Albuquerque, I believe, is a new market for you guys?
Yeah, we're very excited
about
that.
So how does that come about? Like you decide, they have a pretty good baseball season last year, so let's move there. And then
it were that easy.
So how do
the
you...
The dartboard here.
Yeah.
So how do you choose a market? And then what are your steps of going in there to serve that market and to kind of immerse yourself into it?
So we have scoured the U.S. We have put a lot of work into looking at almost every state in the union. We haven't looked at Hawaii, I think, unfortunately. It's out of our price range. But
I volunteer for that trip.
Exactly. So we look first and foremost at talent, right? So it's very easy to look across the country and look at cost of living and narrow down where are these what are termed tier two or tier three cities.
Right.
We then look at the university structure, the education system.
So you have a profile that you're trying to check as many boxes as possible that city meets that profile?
Absolutely.
And then how important is to have kind of an ecosystem of associations like TAI in that market?
Extremely. So it, in fact, is a lot of what has brought us to the cities that we're in today are the organizations like TAI who are starting that tech scene or have created that tech scene and help us get more easily
connected. So you look for like where, how many espresso shops per capita?
Exactly right.
How many laptops are in the local coffee shop?
So you have a profile, right? And then so Albuquerque, I guess, checked enough boxes to go in there. So what's your first move when you go in there? Do you just start meeting the talent or the colleagues?
So we've actually started both with the tech scene and starting to get integrated and understand what organizations are out there. We've been partnering, and Monty can talk a little bit about this, but we've been looking.
He wants you to do it.
Oh. We were really excited in Albuquerque to find that CNM, the local community college, has built what's called the Stimulus Center. And it's a code academy for individuals to come in and go through a rigorous program to get into the tech space.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm actually meeting with them next week to talk about what specific programming we can create, how we can help them, how we can look at STEM education, but also at how we can build a pipeline of talent.
And then so you go in there and you build these relationships with like-minded folks. And then do you say like, hey, now we're hiring, and you just put...
Hiring, absolutely. So we've got a bunch of roles posted already. We're looking to really kind of build that core. So looking for some senior talent in our various practice areas, as well as starting to build relationships with the colleges to understand and the Code Academy to understand who their shining stars are that are graduating.
And then when you do that, then you have a client that's nearby that's going to use this talent?
So not necessarily. It just depends on the opportunities and the things that our clients are needing at the time.
So
based
build
on the talent.
It and they will come?
A little bit of the other way around, right? So we're building based on the needs of our clients, not just filling the center, but looking at really where our clients need us to go,
mm-hmm.
And then finding that talent for them.
On that expansion point, Lee, we've got, this is number 4 in Albuquerque, which we have announced. And then part of the ability for us to hire and ramp up quickly is we get a lot of local press. So these cities are excited to have us come to town and make our commitments of 100 to 200 high-tech, high-paying jobs for those locations. And as I told the folks that gathered for our announcement, the governor was there, the mayor of Albuquerque was there, so it was a great big to-do, beautiful day in Albuquerque, which they have 360 of it, apparently.
Exactly.
The gathering, I said, you know, there's a lot of PhDs in Albuquerque. In fact, the most per capita of any other city in the U.S.
Really?
Because of Sandia Labs and the nuclear research and nuclear activity that goes on there. What we said was we're not really interested in hiring nuclear physicists. That's
right.
Not the work we're doing. However, we are very much interested in hiring your sons and daughters.
That's right. The kids of them.
Here.
Absolutely.
And so they got very excited about the prospects of having their sons and daughters come
right.
back to Albuquerque. And that is one of the value propositions. We have people come back to their locations where they really have a strong yearning to live. I'll give you a quick story. In one of our locations, Mobile, Alabama, one of our newest hires there came from EA Sports on the West Coast, where she had a wonderful job. She fell in love, married a man who grew up in Mobile, Alabama. She also fell in love with Mobile and the Gulf Coast of the U.S.
Sure.
And decided that that's where they wanted to raise a family and move back there. They moved back there right at the beginning of the recession, were not able to find a job. 6 months in, they actually moved back to California, reestablished their roots out there, I guess, and took their jobs back at EA Sports. She kept looking, refused to give up on the idea of getting to the coast.
Right.
About a year and a half ago, we made the announcement that we were there. We built that practice up now to about 80 people or so. 6 months ago, she looked online and saw that Rural Sourcing had an opening for a QA engineer and project manager in our office. She is now there and loving it.
And then that's one of those situations where even if the pay isn't exactly what she was making in the West Coast, it might be, but even if it's not, you're getting a raise just by moving there.
Oh, she will tell you. She has a real house now.
Exactly.
She has a real yard and real bugs in the backyard. She's super happy about it.
Right. So the quality of life probably increases, you know, tenfold.
Astronomically. Really
right.
does.
And then you're really impacting those communities by bringing that talent back, because that's one of the challenges. I mean, we hear it here in Atlanta even, that the brain drain that, you know, people invest in these startups here and then they're like, okay, now move to Boston.
Right.
And then they're taking the brains and the talent and the network with them.
That's right.
And then you're kind of bringing it back to the kind of these old city centers.
Couldn't have said it better myself. The other thing we're doing is giving not only people the chance, the opportunity to establish that and find that balance in their life that they're looking for to have not only an exciting career, but a great life balance as well. And so we talk all the time, or at least part of the thesis is that people in the past were forced to make this choice of either location or vocation.
Right.
And now we come to town and say, you don't have to make a trade-off in either one anymore.
That's right.
Awesome. Yeah. The other thing is that we're doing is it really exciting, and we remind ourselves this all the time, is we're offering people the opportunity to really change their lives. And so we have currently one of our interns in one of our offices who is a 17-year police officer and retired from that job, decided he needed to make a change, started taking night courses in computer programming. He's now one of our newest hires in our location, and you wouldn't believe how happy he is. He goes, Monty, I come to work today, and nobody tried to shoot at me. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great story. We had one of those coding companies here. I think they're called Iron Yard.
Iron Yard.
And they were telling a story about a guy that was working at Goodwill. And then, you know, he's got a family working at Goodwill. And then that's like a 12-week course. Graduates, gets a job like in 2 seconds because, you know, what's the unemployment rate of computer programmers? Like negative something, right?
Right, exactly.
And moved to D.C. is like making like 85 grand a year and just changes life.
Right.
I mean, in 12 weeks. Yeah. It's just amazing the impact that you're having, not only on those individuals, but you're also in the cities. I mean, I would imagine that the cities are embracing you because you become kind of the heart of their revitalization.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You may want to share our Mobile story. So Mobile, Alabama, we opened up about a year and a half ago. Unfortunately, it's taken a long time for us to get into our eventual permanent headquarters, which we are down there, which we just moved into this Monday. The whole value proposition with downtown Mobile was the building we're moving into, which is a beautiful 1940s Buick dealership that has been rehabbed, refurbished to make it into this incredibly beautiful, industrial, chic, super cool coding place, right? Wow. So we just moved our 90 or 80 folks in there on Monday. It's a beautiful building, and the idea is that this is going to be the catalyst for further development. We didn't even get started or finished, moved in, and already across the street, an engineering firm is doing the same thing with an old dilapidated building that's there.
Yeah.
Right. So could you become the catalyst then for something like that?
Yeah.
When they know that you're committed and you're going in there's going to be 80 smart,
It's been on the city planning for a while now. And unfortunately it takes some momentum. And so we were able to bring that momentum, and it's not just across the street. There's now within the 4 or 5 block up and down the street, there have been there's huge change going on and lots of construction, and it is going to be the tech quarter of the future for Mobile. And that's, you know, revitalizing their downtown will help them change the face of their city.
Right. That's wonderful. So you guys must sleep well at night. Because, I mean,
always more to do.
Right, but it's one of those things. And I'm sure there's the frustration of things moving at the speed of government also, that you would like things to move faster, I'm sure.
Yes, although, you know, they've really been embracing us. The mayor of Mobile has been extremely supportive, as well as the political group and in Albuquerque.
And then, so what do you guys need more of?
We always need more talent.
Talent.
We're pretty focused on continuing to grow the tech space and find folks in the tech world.
So once you find that, I guess you have a tipping point where you have enough talent to go to a market, and then you just try to grow that base. Is it?
Yeah, so we identify, I mean, our locations, we've kind of pre-identified that they fit the template that we found in other locations, and then we're growing that. And as we start to get to that 50-60 mark, we start to realize that, okay, we need to find our next center. And so we've embarked on a project when identified not just the next one, but we've been looking at the next three. So we've termed it Project 456 to find so that we can open number 5 next later in next year.
And then how do you guys know you had a good day?
You know, I have a great day when one of our employees pulls us aside, and it happens so often that they're like, I never, 20 years in the business, I never knew it could be this fun. And I think our folks have such an enjoyable time working for our clients. It's not a slog. They jump out of bed. And that to me it's worth everything.
Monty, what about you? How do you, when you're high-fiving somebody, what occurred?
Yeah, you know, it really is listening to our folks and hearing those stories about being given an opportunity they didn't think would exist otherwise. In the past, they've had to trade off something in their vocation and in their world to live in these places. And when a 17-year-old police officer, in all seriousness, tells you that this is changing his life, it gives him a new opportunity, a new second career, if you will, that does make you sleep really, really well at night, I will tell you. To your other question, Lee, what can we use? We can always use more business, right? So I'm, you know, a lot of business development on this end. And so we're always looking for new clients who are interested in this somewhat disruptive model to solve a skills gap, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care how big you are these days. There's no way with the plethora of technologies out there that any Fortune 1000 company can have all the skills that they need in-house. Just can't happen, right? And so we think we're a wonderful alternative for filling that skills gap. And one of the things that I just came back from a Gartner conference a few weeks ago, Jeff Immelt, CEO of GE, was on there, and he talked a lot about the fact that in the 90s and 2000s, it's all about cost savings for them, right? And they shipped, Jack Welch's mantra was 70% outsourced and 70% of that will be in India. Today, Jeff talked about the fact that they've lost a lot of ground because all of that is someone else's IP now, an intellectual property and intellectual capital. And they're hiring now thousands of software developers because they see their business having changed. As he said, we went to bed in the 2000s, an industrial company, and we woke up yesterday realizing we're a software company.
Right.
And so we think that same mantra that when Jack Welch had it, many other companies followed them offshore to India.
Sure.
We think many others now are going to follow them back to the U.S. to understand how you bridge that gap and how you get this stuff to market much quicker, much more efficiently.
So when you're pitching a customer, are you typically working directly with those Fortune 1000 companies, or are you going through like a consulting firm and then the client is theirs?
No, we're working directly with those clients. Those are our clients, and we treat them accordingly. One of the great things about our business model is that we pitch this such that we should feel like their IT shop that just sits in another building in another city, right? Mm-hmm. And so that understanding of their business process, the contextual layer of what we're developing and how we're doing that is awfully important these days. Of what problem are you solving and how does the industry say you should solve that problem? What are the regulations of that industry? And those are things that we can bring to bear to give us an advantage over most of the other typically outsourced companies.
Now, when you are pitching or talking to a prospective client, how important is the purpose-driven company mantra? Do they hire you just because of that, or it's always the
No. It's a tertiary thing, right? It makes us feel good.
Well, you lead with it. I mean, you're saying it's tertiary, but that was the first thing out of your mouth.
Yeah, for your audience, it is, and it's awfully important for us. But I will tell you that we, first and foremost, know that in order to make a difference, in order to change the world, you got to have a sustainable model.
Sure. Right?
And that means you've got to sell profitable business. You got to solve clients' problems, and they'll keep coming back to you with those opportunities. And so that's what we focus on, really, is how can we solve those problems in a cost-effective, efficient manner? And then at the end of the day, Lee, so that CIO and I can shake hands and agree on doing a deal. And then because we did it in an appropriate business fashion, and then we can sleep really well at night knowing that we also changed some people's lives.
But when you're talking to those CIOs, is it they're focused on just solving their problem and your solution utilizing this talent that in these kind of tier two cities helps them do that in a more efficient manner?
It does. And, there's obviously a cost savings for them, right?
So and time zone, language.
The language, the contextual development that you understand how their business processes work, what they're trying to do when they say, I need Salesforce.com and I need it to do X, Y, and Z because my marketing people are out there talking to the consumers.
Right. And then what is the pain they're having to even engage a conversation with you? Because obviously they are already doing work with somebody.
Yeah, in many cases they are. In other cases, it's brand new development. And in some cases, we are supporting development that has been done already. I'll give you a quick story. There was one of our early clients that is still a client today. We feel like we're pretty sticky with our clients. They, on average, stay with us for at least 3 years. Nelson called me early on in our life as a company. And he said, Monty, I have a real problem. I'm the product manager for this stuff. The releases keep getting going out there and they're full of bugs. And I am working around the clock with my offshore team trying to solve this problem. He said, I'm constricted on how much money my CIO has given me to solve this problem. Can you do this work for this amount of money? And can you help me get my life back, frankly? We did that. Nelson's quote to me later on, as he owned that team, was the fact that you did the work for the same amount of money. I get twice the throughput, and I got my life back. And so he has been our best client reference for a long, long time now.
All right. So next for you, I guess, is just keep expanding, keep serving the markets that you're already in.
Yeah, so we went through the exercise that Ingrid mentioned earlier when we picked Albuquerque. Part of that code name for our project was Project 456. Mm-hmm. So we think we have pretty good line of sight where centers 5 and 6 will be already. It's not Hawaii, Lee. I'm sorry to disappoint you there.
Maybe 7.
Yeah,
seven, maybe 8, 9.
Yeah, we'll go there and take a look at that point. But we do think there's still a lot of marginalized talent in the U.S. that we can go in, apply our model of how we do things, set up these cool environments with foosball tables and Red Bull in the refrigerator and wear your shorts and your flip-flops to work and all that, and create the kind of environments that people feel like, I'm not trading off anything in my career. I'm getting to live where I want to live.
Right. And then let's talk about Ty a little bit. You guys won that big award at this past TyCon. How do you see your involvement with Ty moving forward?
Well, one, they are, as I was love to hear, I mean, say earlier, they really are on a diversity mission, right? So that comes up clear.
So you're right a future away. President? Is that what, that's what I'm hearing of me.
Well, I do not want to step into Karen's role, no. I'm still growing this one. But we would love to help out in any way we can to talk to groups of people to talk about what it takes to be an entrepreneur and what it means in that setting and how you do that. In fact, I just spoke with a class or a group at Georgia Tech the other day on I started my career at Accenture. It was the best learning ground I could have ever imagined. I could not be doing this job today had I not gotten a lot of that formal training early on in my career to do what I do now.
And then, Ingrid, do you see yourself playing in the Thai sandbox a little bit?
So I've actually attended many events. I really enjoy. I think it's helpful for us, even as we're serving Fortune 1000 clients, to remember what it's like to start a company with one, you know, company of one.
Right.
And I learn a lot from being a part of those and love the work that they're doing in the space. I think it's great for Atlanta, but it's also great for just the technology industry in general.
And there's Thai chapters all over the world. So
that's correct.
As you grow.
That's correct.
Party everywhere.
That's right. Albuquerque may need one of these.
Yeah. So I follow the model, you know, when you like being a catalyst, Mobile, making a note of that.
There you go.
That's where we're going next.
That's where
I like it.
Well, we just opened a studio in Pensacola, which is just down the road
from
Mobile.
Across the bay.
All right. So if somebody wants to learn more, website for you guys?
www.ruralsourcing.com.
And that's, so you're looking for people interested in jobs, maybe in the different markets that you serve?
Yeah,
as well
clients,
as clients,
colleagues, absolutely. Get in touch with us there. We're on Twitter at Rural Sourcing as well, Rural Sourcing and Facebook. So any of the above.
Well, thank you both for being part of the show today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you.
All right, Amin, who's up next?
So we have our great char mentor, who's been a char mentor for a long time with Ty, Kamal Parag. He's also a sponsor as well, HNW. He's given back I can't even count. It's a huge Excel sheet.
He's counted. He's an accountant.
Yeah,
that's
he's an
a job.
Right. Yeah. But no, his involvement with TYEU, connecting people at events, educating whoever he can when he
All right,
them.
Let's let him let, hear.
Let him
why,
hear.
Why doesn't he tell us
the
what
notion
he's
of mentorship continues?
All right, Kamal, you're part of HAW. Why don't you share a little bit about what you guys do at HAW?
Okay, thank you. I'm just going to start first of all by congratulating you guys across the table from me on that wonderful award and great job you're doing.
Thank you.
I say this about Ty before I get to HAW, but Ty, one of the fascinating things for me at Ty is about mentoring, giving back, but also at the same time, you're teaching to learn. So there's a lot of learning happening at the same time as mentoring. And just sitting here today, I'm learning a tremendous amount from these guys and their business model and just what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just being involved in that is fascinating.
And then at HAW, what made you get involved with Ty?
Well, just so usually there's a notion that if you're not running a business, you're not really an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
But as a service provider, as a professional services person, I do consider myself to be an entrepreneur because that's what I'm doing. I'm building business as well,
right,
and helping others in the same way. So that's really what got me triggered and be part of this Thai network in just being able to give back what I've learned with my clients along the way and the wounds that you see, helping others not go through the same pains and just help them be successful, really. That's what it is.
Now, when you're working with an association like Thai, and you got involved with the TYE, why don't you share a little bit about that?
Okay, so
the college, right? The university level?
That was the high school level.
Oh, the high school?
It's both, actually.
Both,
it's high school and university.
Yeah.
So the Young Entrepreneurs TYE is a program started off by Thai a few years ago, and it started off with high school children, kids, and it was extremely, extremely successful. And a lot of people were just, you know, clamoring to be part of that program to help give these kids a start.
Right. Ingrid was mentioning that there seems to be kind of this renaissance of younger people wanting to be entrepreneurs and getting involved in that world. You're seeing that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things we're seeing is even within my office, the younger folks starting out, what they want to do is they want to be entrepreneurs. So they want to do something within their organization. So we're a corporate entity, but you got kids who want to start a business line, or they want to start some service offering or something that, again, solves a problem for clients on our end and ultimately helps them be more successful.
Right.
So
and then,
you see that all the time.
And then, so how does the program work? Do you, they come to you with an idea, they're on a team, or you help kind of mentor them through the process?
Yeah. So they sign up, there's room for a limited number of kids, maybe 30 or 40 kids for the year, and that program lasts several months through the year. They meet every Sunday afternoon, so it's a commitment from these kids, but they're serious about doing this. They're
right
there every Sunday, and they're going through the process, and every week there's a new, there's somebody else coming in teaching them about how to basically start from an idea in their business all the way through right, forming it and making it a viable, sustainable entity, because that's what you really want. So you're teaching them everything from start to end about how to go about their business. And then they have a bunch of other charter mentors or just membership base within Thai to help them with any problems, questions, roadblocks, things like that they have.
But this isn't a theoretical, right? They're building something that could actually be a real business?
Yes, this is real. This is real, yeah.
I mean, you just get surprised. You know, one of the kids, this is how they start off. So, you know, when we tell them, hey, write your name as many different ways as you can, right? And some of these kids, they just, you know, sometimes write it backwards, side to side. And then when things get really, like, you know, exciting is when you start writing, the kids start writing in Braille. You know, they're just like, oh, this is my name in Braille.
Right.
Or they write the entire alphabet and miss their, and they don't write their letters. So it's like, oh, the whole alphabet's there and their name letters are missing. So it's just really unique. And Kamal is a testament to this show. I mean, once you meet these kids, you get really amped up because you see like their level of thinking. And once they go through the ideation phase of it, it's just, wow.
And they're committed. I mean, these are high school kids, university students coming in on Sundays, spending, you know, most
right, it's
Sundays,
months, right? This is several months.
Yeah. Football Sunday, yeah, it's towards the end of the
day. So this just shows their commitment and that kind of ignites on the other end about helping them.
Now, for you, you decided to be a charter member. A charter member, for those listeners that aren't familiar, it's one of the few organizations where you have to pay money to volunteer.
It works. It works, I promise.
Sustainable.
See, so that was a, you know, I'm sure that a lot of associations, you can just write a check and you're
yeah,
done.
Yeah. I think when you pay money, you become more serious
mm-hmm,
at wanting to be part of that group. And the thing is, like I said earlier, the most important piece is learning. So these are people who have created businesses over and over, become very, very successful, and they're here willing to contribute that time, paying to contribute
right,
that time to others. And so just being amongst those people is incredible. Just being able to learn from them is what I think is most important.
Now, as Monty articulated earlier, there's a purpose. You're doing this to help the greater good here, but also there has to be a business case as well. For HAW, you guys invested in being a sponsor. How do you see kind of a business return on that?
Well, we do. It's building networks. It's creating connections. if not always for myself, creating connections
for the firm,
for two other people, or right. for the firm. Yeah, absolutely, for the firm.
So you've seen, do you have examples where you've been able to meet people and actually kind of bring them back to the firm?
Several different examples, yeah.
See that?
Mostly.
It's paying off for
them. I'm writing down.
But that's what you want, I mean, right, for your sponsors.
Of course, absolutely.
You know, there's everybody, you know, wants to do good and wants to help their community. But when you see that these connections and this network that you're building is actually contributing to those firms growing.
Well, you have a room full of just quality people, right? I mean, I'm fortunate when I go to a Thai event, you know, Ingun probably say so as well, is, you know, you see a really good people that are ready, excited, willing to, you know, soak in education. And also, everyone there has a notion of giving back.
Right. Right?
It's just whenever we have our events, we allot a lot of time to networking, and a lot of people they think that's so valuable, right? That, you know, we're not rushing them into just like, oh, come on, go grab your seat right now. No, it's the networking is sometimes most fruitful, right? Because whenever they're there, they're making connections, they're meeting people, and another part of it is that it's global. Let's say if Monty and them were to ever, you know, go to Boston or wherever, they could find Thai there and, you know, kind of meet that same ecosystem that's here in Atlanta.
So now, Kamal, for you personally, as your career is progressing, is this something that even if you left HAW, retired, you would still be involved with Thai?
I think so.
You think this is now, it's a lifestyle. It's beyond kind of a business job or a business network.
Yeah. I think it's fulfilling to be able to share your ideas and thoughts and help see someone else become successful.
Now, for you personally in your business, who's your ideal client?
Well, I am a partner in our technology and manufacturing practice areas.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my primary focus areas, more technology than manufacturing. And as a result of that, I have a heavy slant towards international companies.
Mm-hmm.
So multi-state and international companies. So that's my ideal.
So they may not be here in Atlanta, or they're Atlanta and they have an international footprint?
It's both.
Uh-huh.
It's both. Many of them are based out of Atlanta, headquartered here, but do work all across the U.S., including Hawaii.
Everybody's putting their name in that hat, you know.
And internationally. Mm-hmm. I mean, manufacturing technology by nature of the industry is heavily bent towards international operations. So 75% of my clients are multi-state and international companies.
And then Georgia has a lot of international firms?
Yeah, significant number. I think Georgia has a very high number of international companies, manufacturing and tech companies,
mm-hmm.
mainly because of the accessibility.
The airport.
The airport, yeah, is a big contributor to that.
What about, does it work the other way as well? Do you have clients that are in other countries that are thinking about headquartering here?
Yes, all the time. We work with, we make trips all across Europe, Asia, South America, talking with companies who are looking, if not now, but in next, you know, 18 months to 2 years, looking to set up a footprint in the U.S. and bringing them and showing them that Atlanta or Georgia is the right place to do that.
And then a firm like HAW can really help them in a lot of areas.
Yeah. We'll help them with everything from, you know, start to end, help them figure out which location would be the best within the state or within the city in terms of all these different tax credits. We'll help them with, if they're doing some kind of exporting from here, there's a lot of incentives for that. All sorts of research and development credits that are available. So tons of different incentives that the government offers either on a discretionary or non-discretionary basis to help them get located in Georgia.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, do you have a LinkedIn? Is that the best way to get a hold of you or your firm's website?
LinkedIn or my firm's website is www.hawcpa.com.
And then for LinkedIn, how would they find you on LinkedIn?
Just LinkedIn with my name, Kamal Parag.
All right. Well, Amin, thank you so much for putting this together.
No, thank you. It was the notion of everyone giving back, just, you know, everyone's talking about like, oh, we want to help, we want to do this. It's just so humbling to hear. And that's, again, one of the things that I just love about being part of, you know, organizations that give back, like with Thai, you know, it's good to know that you have a place where you can go where you know that, hey, I want to help these group of people, and there's someone there, right?
Right.
So it's awesome.
And then if somebody want to learn more about Thai website?
Thai, it's atlanta.thai.org. And we have a really great event coming up next in a couple of weeks. It's the Who's Who in the Entrepreneurial Ecosystem. Our last year was the first year that we did it. We had just a sellout. And what it is we're bringing in entrepreneur organizations in Atlanta all at one place.
Wow.
And you get to, it's basically, you know, giving, you know, up-and-coming entrepreneurs, people that really want to know what the ecosystem, the entrepreneurial ecosystem is like in Atlanta and be able to just network. That's all it's going to be. There's no script. Mm-hmm. All it is just we're going to have, you know, organizations like the Iron Yard, Venture Atlanta, ATDC, Startup Chick, Startup Atlanta. All these folks are going to come and they're just going to have a round table and they're going to have, you know, their program director / founder, and they're just going to talk to the entrepreneurs, you know, there, just tell them like, hey, this is what we offer. And, you know, if you're into tech, you go to ATDC. If you're into, coding, you go to Iron Yard. But, and the misfits come to Atlanta, right? So if you don't fit anywhere, you come to Thai Atlanta.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for putting the show together. Thanks to all of our guests. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.